Hey, what's up, everybody? Sarah is back, SG Best, and I'm back for the rest. And I've got here Roger Edwards. He's a marketing consultant based in the UK, Edinburgh, not Edinburgh, but Edinburgh, as I'm told. Hey, everyone. This is Sarah, and welcome to my show.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me on the show. Really pleased to be here. Really looking forward to having this chat. And yes, I do live in Edinburgh. It's a source of constant amusement amongst us Brits that visitors to our beautiful city call it Edinburgh or Edinborough, but it's actually Edinburgh. And it's quite entertaining to try to get people to pronounce it properly.
But I did.
You did.
I didn't want to get yelled at. Yeah.
Yes. Some people call it Edinburgh as well, but Edinburgh is the way to way to describe it.
Yeah. Okay. So I just felt so compelled to have Roger on my show because I had felt like I had found my long lost twin brother when I saw his LinkedIn profile and it said, "Talk to me because I can help you cut the BS from your marketing." Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. To use a British accent. So. We're going to talk about today bloating. Roger uses the term bloating. I'm not as refined as Roger, so I use the term barfing. You may have heard, I've published numerous podcasts on this, the two sentence rule, stop barfing, marketing lab rat. All of those shows, reference back to those shows, y'all, if you want to know what I'm talking about, but it's pretty clear. I just said it best one day when I said this quote, if I could have a one-word website, then I would. Okay? No one wants to hear this stuff. Finance is the most dry, boring stuff out there. No one wants to listen to it. It's like listening to the dentist talk about what kind of resin they use in the fillings that they're using while they're drilling your mouth. It's like, first of all, no one likes talking to financial advisors. It's not fun. Just get to the point and then shut up. So Roger is here to discuss what he calls in his much finer terminology, bloating, I call it barfing. Roger, what do you think bloating means to you?
Well, Sarah, I've worked in financial services for quite a long time, in and out of financial services, in marketing roles. And in the United Kingdom, financial services is just as complicated an industry as is in the United States. And a lot of financial services companies are big. You know, they employ thousands of people, if not hundreds of thousands of people. And I think that the bigger a company gets, especially in a complex industry, it just becomes endemic within that company that they just can't avoid adding long sentences, long paragraphs, passive language, and gobbledygook and jargon into their
mind. I'm sorry, I'm snoring while you're talking, just thinking about it.
You know what I mean? It's almost like the scenario I always used to have to fight against, from when I was the most junior person in the marketing department to when I was the marketing director, was that a marketing person might write something really quite easy, a one or two word summary of something. But then that before it could get published, that piece of marketing would have to be signed off by the compliance manager, and the compliance manager add a load of stuff in to supposedly make it compliant. And then that two sentences would then go to the legal person, and the legal person would probably add about five more sentences to make it legally binding. And he might also change a bit of it because he didn't actually like the way that it had been written in the first place. So now you've got an entire paragraph, and then the customer service guy might sign it off, and then it goes to the marketing director, it goes to the CEO or the C-suite. And by the time everybody's got involved, that one or two word summary, strapline, advertising copy, whatever you want to call it, are suddenly metamorphosized into this gigantic bloated piece of copy, which isn't engaging. A customer or a client is going to look at that copy, and as you made the snoring noises before, is either going to go to sleep on it or is just going to say, "I'm not reading that. It's too long and it's too boring."
It's hopeless. It's a nightmare. But you know what's a real nightmare though? Like the worst of them all, Roger?
Yeah.
The committee.
Yeah. Yeah. Writing by committee. And it happened.
Just shoot me now. Just really happened, like somebody just put me out of my misery.
What I tried to, when I was in charge in big financial services companies, I used to try to say to people, okay, look, the marketing people are the best at writing simple, engaging copy, website, whatever it might be, brochures in the old days. And it's okay for a legal person to say that is downright illegal. You can't say it in there and therefore we'll change it. It's okay for a compliance person to say that doesn't comply with the regulations. You need to change it. But it's not okay for people to just have an opinion on a piece of copy and change it because they think they know better or they think that they can improve it when it's not actually their job. I mean, marketing people don't go to the accountants every year and say, we don't like the accounts that you've just signed off. We want to add a few figures in here and we want to add a few figures in there, because they know that the accountants
right,
know.
We should do a cash basis versus accrual accounting.
Exactly. So,
I don't say that.
So the marketing people should be
the worst.
Should be given the ability to do their job. And the committee shouldn't change it unless it's wrong or unless it's illegal. That's my opinion. It's the changing it because you've got an opinion on it that creates that bloat, creates the barf, as you call it, and creates that end game where you end up with something that effectively doesn't engage the client. And therefore, if you don't engage the client, it's no use. It's not going to help them to get to know you, like you, and trust you enough to do business with you.
This is why corporate marketing ends up a big, generic, bland mishmash, because there's no way to integrate multiple personalities into one idea.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Yeah. Like, yeah. You shouldn't even try it. If any of you are listening to this and are thinking of doing something like this, like, oh, you know, there's like, here's what financial advisors do. Even if they're solo advisors, sometimes they work for like a master firm. Like they have, you know, a parent firm or, you know, and sometimes people, the CEO of the company will come and say, oh, I want to redo the website. And we have to get all the advisors' input and reflect their brand in it. And I'm like, nope, I'm not doing that.
Yep. Yep.
Like I've actually started to put my foot down, because if you don't, what inevitably happens is you actually risk not getting the project done, which means, I mean, just to be honest, like it's frustrating for the marketing person to not get the project done from a job satisfaction standpoint of like productivity and results. You can't get the results for your client, but it's also unsatisfying because then you can't get paid. Like it takes forever to get paid on this stuff. So, and I'm just saying, honestly, like we, you know, we marketing people, like we do get paid for our time. And a lot of times we just get so blatantly taken advantage of in these committee scenarios.
Yeah. And another problem with the committee is that people are allowed to say no, and they may just say, oh, I don't like the way you've written that. Or, you need to give a bit more detail on that, or and that's an opinion, but they don't give it a direction. So the marketing person then goes, well, do I add? Do I take away? And as you say, it just creates endless discussion, and nobody's actually saying, yeah, it's okay, it's fine, it's signed off, and it goes. You know, if you can avoid writing by committee, and especially if you can avoid sign off by committee, then you're going to end up with so much more compelling marketing material than if you have all of those people sat round a table, actually just hindering each other from getting a job done.
What I'm going to say is that if any of you are out there and are thinking of writing by committee like this, or are going to get multiple people involved with, you know, a website project or whatever the project may be, I would say just go to a competitor's website and don't copy or plagiarize, but just kind of assimilate the general messaging and put that on your website. Or like go to three different competitors' websites and they'll all say the same thing too. And just like, what I'm saying is don't spend the 10 grand to get a new website. Like you could do it yourself. That's not what you pay a marketing person for. Don't even attempt to work with the marketing person like me. Because there's going to be a divorce. This is going to be an unhappy relationship. If you're going to give me money, then resent giving me money. And eventually, it's going to end up bloated, barfed, generic, dry. And you're going to be like, what did I hire her for? I could have done this myself. Exactly! I told you that in the beginning, you committee people.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, to be perfectly honest, Most people who are going to be your customers, who are going to be your clients, like easy to understand language. And it doesn't matter whether you're in financial services or whether you're a car mechanic or whether you're running a restaurant. Most people like to be able to understand what they read. And the best way to do that is to talk in a chatty in a chatty sort of way. What I tend to do when I, my first drafts, when I write, whether it's a website page or a piece of marketing copy, I'll get my iPhone out and I'll use the dictation feature. You know, the little microphone icon down in the bottom. You press that and you just talk into your iPhone as if you're talking like we are now. And it just prints it out all out on the screen. And the beauty of that is that it prints it out on the screen exactly as you're saying it. And I'll wander around the house if I have to write an article for Money Marketing Magazine. I'll wander around the house and I'll just talk into my iPhone. And in 10, 15 minutes, I've got 500 words of me talking about this subject in the way that I talk. And that's great. And then I might go in and edit it. Obviously, the punctuation sometimes doesn't register properly when you're dictating like that. But that's a really good way of getting a first piece of copy, which is easy to understand and is written like somebody would say it. And then the trick is, and the challenge is, to stick with that and don't let that committee or whoever else it might be come along and start adding in bigger words or adding in passive sentences or adding in jargon and gobbledygook and bloat and barf, because your beautiful, simple piece of copy that you started saying into your phone will then, as we said before, transform into this horrible, unreadable piece of BS.
Right. Now, emails. I've been barfed on over email. And I think I've probably barfed on other people. I don't barf anymore over email unless I really have to. I actually started limiting my emails to two sentences as much as humanly possible. And that is how I respond to people most of the time, because I have four kids and I don't have time. Like, yeah. I don't have time to sit there. And it actually has simplified my whole workflow. I mean, this has been probably the biggest business improvement that I've ever done in my whole practice.
Let's face it, most people today are communicating by text message or iMessage or WhatsApp, and people are used to really bite-sized communications. And yet we seem to think that as soon as you get into an email situation, that it's okay to put paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. And if you think about it, most people are reading emails on their phones or their iPads as well these days. So they're not used to going from WhatsApp into an email app on a phone and suddenly going from one or two word communications to four or five paragraph communications. So why not introduce the same sort of instant messenger format into your emails and therefore...
Okay, I'm going to tell you why people do that.
Go on then.
Okay. Because there's a complicated idea that they can't express in two sentences. And if you really do have to... There's some stuff I will not talk about over email. For example, one client of mine was doing like some videos and he did like a bad job. Like he didn't look right and he wasn't doing a good job. And he's like, give me feedback. And I'm like, I'm not going to give you feedback over email. I'm like, let's discuss when can you talk. Right. Like people send emails sometimes because there's an emotional subject they want to talk about over email, but they don't want to say it to your face because they don't want to dialogue on about it. They just want to emotionally unload on you. Like a frustration email. Like there was one client that was unhappy with his website and he sent me this email and it was like six paragraphs long. And then I'm like, can we talk about this? Like, you know, because I don't appreciate really getting barfed on so negative over email. I really would have liked that he didn't do that, but he did it. And then he didn't even want to talk about it after he barfed on me over email. So I think that's when people barf, is they want to write the like breakup letter, the I'm leaving you letter or the breakup letter or the emotional, like I'm not happy letter, but they don't feel comfortable discussing it because they don't want a dialogue. It's like an avoidance strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easier to send loads of words than it is to pick up the phone and actually have a conversation. But maybe even if you have just put a load of stuff into an email or onto a web page, what I always try to encourage people to do is to go back and give it giving an edit. So can you reduce every paragraph that you've written? Can you reduce that down to one sentence? And any sentence that was originally in it on its own, can you reduce that down to one or two words? And if people can get themselves into that sort of discipline, then they almost start to self-edit and to self-reduce, as opposed to creating all of this this bloat.
Right. Or even on LinkedIn Messenger, like I've been doing some sponsored advertising, and, you know, I advise people. I have this membership where I teach people how to communicate, and all of my messages are two sentences or less.
Mm.
Like, when you get an instant message, when you get messaged over LinkedIn, have you ever gotten these messages that are like 8 lines long? I don't even read it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like, LinkedIn Messenger is not designed for that.
But do you not think, I mean, one of the things about LinkedIn that I think, and I've been picked up on this a few times, you know, I'll put a post up on LinkedIn and somebody will come along and say, this is a professional platform. You shouldn't be making a post like this. And my immediate reaction to that is, well, what does professional mean? Does that mean that you've got to be wearing a tie, or does that mean you've got to be over the age of 50? Or does it mean what it really means? I mean, a professional person is somebody who earns money for doing what their job is. I don't think that you can play that professional card, but I do believe that there is a certain mindset that thinks, because LinkedIn is a professional platform, that means you've got to be professional in the way that you communicate. And for a lot of people, professional means long emails and big words and bloat and barf.
Right. Stiff. Like, just your stiff language. Yeah.
Passive right. language and words, that sort of thing. But you don't need to. You know, LinkedIn is another social media platform, and the messenger facility, you know, there's no reason why you shouldn't use the same short sentences, one words that you would use in iMessage or in WhatsApp or in a normal text message. It's just the way a lot of people communicate these days. And to me, professional doesn't come into it. Communicate right. in the way that people understand, clearly and easily to understand, and that's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. And then also another topic we have here on the list is marketing brochures.
Mm.
They're the worst. Yeah. Like, does anyone ever, like, do you ever get one of those brochures when you're in, like, your doctor's office or something about, like, here, like, if you get this rash, like, you need to do this or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yes, in that case, I want to know about that, right? Because, like, this is a medical thing. I don't want to walk around with, like, an issue, right? So I will take the brochure. I'll read, like, every word of that brochure, okay? Or, like, how to avoid your kids getting cavities, right? It's a pain. I don't want that to happen. I'll do that. There's nothing interesting about financial advising to be put in a brochure that anyone's going to read.
No, but I think that, you know, you want to read a book in a doctor's surgery about how to protect your family. You still don't need it to be written in technical medical jargon. There is still a way that you can write medical stuff in language that people can understand. And if you flip that and look at, in the UK, we have something called critical illness insurance. I don't know whether you have that in the United States. It might be called something else, but it's like life insurance, but it pays out if you have a heart attack or cancer or something like that. Now, a lot of the brochures and the booklets that promote critical illness cover in the UK use all this complicated medical jargon. So it'll describe a heart attack as a death of the portion of heart muscle evidenced by raised troponins and typical chest pain and whatever else it is. And most people have got no idea what a troponin is. They're not going to go and Google what a troponin is. Okay, it's a marker in the blood that registers heart activity, but most people have no idea what that is. So it's our duty as marketers in whichever industry it is to find a simpler way of explaining things like that. So if you're in a doctor's surgery and the doctor's booklet is teaching you how to live a healthy lifestyle, then use language that people can understand. Don't use medical jargon. And I think the same applies to financial services. Try to find The problem is when you work in an industry every single day, and you and I have work in financial services all the time, we become immune to all of these terminologies, life insurance, term insurance, investments, pensions, managed funds, whatever it might be. But the man on the street, the customer, they don't know what this language means. So if we assume they know nothing, and how can we put it into language that they can understand? And if you have that in your head, then I think whatever industry you're in, you can try to create something that they can understand.
Yeah. So for the final topic, I have presentations on the list. And now, Roger, I know you're a conference speaker. I'm a keynote speaker as well. I actually started doing something recently on my webinars. I'm not doing in-person keynotes as much because I just had a baby and I have 4 kids under 6 years old. So it's like I get home from, I'm basically changed my desk. Like if I get home from being out for 3 days, it's like I have to immediately inject people with vegetables, you know, because they haven't been eating. It's like wrong pajamas on the wrong kid, you know, who needs Tylenol? I mean, it's a mess, right? So I've just started doing these webinars. I've been doing a lot of them. And I noticed that when I take the time to review and ask people for questions, beginning, middle, and end of the presentation, it goes so much better. I get higher ratings. But I actually stop every like 10 minutes and I do a review of the information. I do a bullet pointed list and I review the information because let's be honest, who can pay attention after 10 minutes?
Absolutely. And, you know, what I try to do when I put together a presentation is similar to what you've described. I've been speaking for many, many years, but a couple of years back, I went on almost like a speaker's refresher boot camp. Mm-hmm. And it was run by an American guy who I respect quite a lot. He's called Marcus Sheridan. You may have come across him. He's quite a famous marketer in the United States. And he runs this boot camp. And he teaches this whole concept of segments. So instead of saying, oh, I've got an hour-long presentation, you actually say, well, I've got an hour. So there's effectively 6 segments within that hour, equating to what you've just said there, about 10 minutes, because 10 minutes is the attention span that you'll get from most people who are sitting on an uncomfortable chair in a conference room. And you craft the presentation around those segments. The beauty is that once you put these segments together, and each segment usually starts off with a question, then there's a story, then there's a challenge or a call to action. And the beauty is once you've set your segments up, if somebody comes along to you and says, Sarah, we'd like you to do a 30-minute presentation, then you can say, oh, okay, that's segment 1, segment 5, and segment 6, and that's about 30 minutes. Or if they come along and say, actually, we only need a TED Talk type thing, so that's going to be 20 minutes, then you go, oh, I'll do segment 3 and segment 7. And if you do it that way, you've got these great little chunks, each of which is compelling, each of which includes a story, each of which includes something that might challenge the audience. And then you put them together in the correct order to meet the needs of the audience. Then that can create quite an engaging way of doing things because, as you say, almost like every 10 minutes, they're getting something new, they're getting a boost, which is going to hopefully get them through the whole thing.
Yeah, if you're barfing for like half hour, and advisors, I mean, like this could be in your monthly market outlook meeting with your research team. It could be in a presentation with a client. It's any kind of a sales presentation with a prospect. It's not necessarily just a keynote up on stage, because I know a lot of advisors aren't in that kind of a business. They don't do things like that. But if you are, just even for any kind of presentation you do, when you are up on stage presenting to an audience, do not barf.
No.
Do little mini barfettes of 10 minutes each, and it's less like barfing. They won't mind as much.
That's right. And of course, barfing doesn't just equate to what you say, what comes out of your mouth. It all often equates to what you put up on your slides as well. Do you know, it never ceases to amaze me. Just about every single conference I go to, and I was at one last Friday down in London, and this always happens. I can guarantee it almost happens. Always happens is somebody will put a slide up on the screen with really tiny writing, which you would need a microscope to read, even if you were sat at the front of the room.
Even if you're like 30 years old, sorry. If you're presenting to retired people or people who are in their 70s, there is no chance. There is no chance they can read the small writing. Okay,
but you know what it is. The person will, and they will always, I guarantee as well, they will always say this. There's a lot on this slide, so most of you probably won't be able to read it. And I'm sitting there with my hand in my hand saying, well, why have you put it up then? Why didn't you just make it simpler? Or why did you just not tell the story? As opposed to, I mean, it's almost like it makes them look stupid.
Wow, it just,
I guarantee it happens every single time.
I know. In your on your LinkedIn profile, it says "no death by bloody PowerPoint." That's the British way to say it.
Yes. It's okay, sort cool. of it's sort of swearing, but it isn't.
Right. Okay. Well, I know these things. Okay, Roger. Listen, I've enjoyed this talk. You know, everybody. My buddy Roger Edwards going to have his contact information. Roger, thanks so much for being on the show.
Been an absolute pleasure, Sarah. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Okay, cool. And everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And we'll see you next time. Bye.